Well, hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope everybody's having an absolutely terrific day today. And how are you doing today, Deb?
Austin, I'm doing great. This is the day the Lord hath made, and the great news is that Benjamin Netanyahu is still fighting for his political survival in Israel. And I really hope and pray they've got a political system over there that's not completely hacked by the Rothschild banking cartel. And the fellow folks in Israel over there basically know he's a career criminal and he needs to be going down the road. And so I hope that he cannot get a coalition put together and he's not the ability to remain prime minister. But I don't know. We'll see what happens with all these guys. I mean, he seems to be doing the bidding of the Rothschild banking cartel. So we'll see how that all works out. Or this could just be more circus and mirror show for the masses. It's kind of like Andre the Giant versus Hulk Hogan. Let's see who wins. And you're kind of like, wow, okay, whatever. By the way, the U.S. Immigration Court's backlogs now exceed 1 million cases. I don't even know how to comprehend that because there's not enough judges to deal with this. I mean, not even anywhere near. It's like when Q tells you there's 100 million new people basically going to be, you know, tried in military tribunals. I mean, unless you start doing that with massive amounts of people, like 100,000 at a time, it ain't going to get done. And so it's amazing to me that, you know, that people still believe all the Q nonsense. And I'm looking now at the U.S. immigration courts, and I'm amazed by this. It says the backlog deportation docket pending in the U.S. immigration courts surpassed 1 million cases in August, despite the Trump administration's varied attempts to cut back on asylum claims. And here's what's happening. These people are coming across the border, and they're trying to deport them. And they're basically filing for asylum. And that's why we've got over 1 million people now that have come in just probably in the last year that are all filing and filing and filing and filing to slow down their deportation. To me, it seems, Austin, that the better way to do this would be not to let them come across the border to begin with. Just, you know, whatever. You know, let's just say let's not let you in, because once we get you in, we can't get you out. And it's just unbelievable to me that this is still going on. And even as we speak, the Pentagon is canceling 3 border wall projects because the cost went up. 3 proposed sections of the border wall for Arizona are on hold, according to a Monday federal court filing, because they're going to cost more than the Defense Department planned on spending. The Army Corps of Engineers has determined that they are insufficient contract savings to undertake the 3 additional projects totaling 20 miles of construction on the U.S.-Mexico border. Guys, if we can't put together enough money to fund 20 miles of construction on the U.S.-Mexico border, what the heck are they building here? I mean, this is nuts. The filing is part of 3 ongoing lawsuits over using $2.5 billion in DOD counter-drug funding on border projects. The Supreme Court lifted a freeze on that spending handed down by a lower court in July. But as the suit is ongoing, the Pentagon must file updates to its plans in federal court. So I'm sure they're having military industrial contractors often build this border wall. And, of course, you can't have a $5 hammer. It has to be a $5,000 hammer. So it just doesn't make any sense to me. Well, it's almost funny to me. It's not funny. It's irony. I was telling you guys that yesterday. It's one of those things that you got to go, this is crazy. Oh, by the way, Democrats say the red flag database for gun control cannot include gang databases despite gangs committing 80% of gun murders. In other words, if you're a white guy, they want to take your gun, they can do it. But if you're part of a gang, even if you're a white guy, black guy, or Hispanic guy, they've got to leave you alone. Democrat advanced a new measure this week to encourage states to pass red flag gun laws authorizing the removal of guns and ammunition from individuals deemed as dangerous by any anonymous, any uncredible, any uncountable person. But it would not include the already existing list of violent gang members. Republicans tried to add an amendment to include known gang members, but the Democrats will not permit it. Did somebody drop these people on their head when they were little, despite the fact that gangs are causing almost all of the gun violence? The amendment has failed. This is further evidence that Congress has no interest in reducing violence in America, but instead wants law-abiding citizens to be disarmed. I don't even know how to respond to this, because, of course, if you're a white Christian male, you have to be a neo-Nazi. You have to be a white supremacist. You have to be a person who's an absolute disaster to have in your country. You've got to be a person that they want to disarm and tell them to shut up. But known gang members, Austin, MS-13 gangs, the Crips, the Bloods, everybody who's got known gang affiliations and memberships cannot be put on a red flag, according to Democrats. What do you think about it?
Well, the aspect of it is we've seen this push now for the last couple of years. They've come up with these comments and said, we're not going to take your guns. We just want, you know, we want common sense gun laws. That's always the terminology they like to use. But the issue is, I mean, even deeper than this, if you want to start looking at true gun control, you have to look at the morals and ethics of a society, because a firearm is simply just a tool, just as is a hammer or a baseball bat or a knife. So banning an inanimate object for a moral issue poses no legitimate fix for any of it. And that's what people have to understand. Everybody's getting their emotions involved and, oh, we need to ban this and we need to ban that. If we're really looking at deaths and deaths related to the United States, then pretty much, yeah, vehicles need to be banned, alcohol needs to be banned, knives need to be banned, hammers, baseball bats, just about every single blunt, inanimate object or operating vehicle that can be used as a weapon or compound or substance that can make you do crazy things, including pharmaceutical drugs, has to be completely banned. But even if you did that, even if you took us to a full-blown tyrannical society and banned every single item, that still doesn't fix a moral or social problem that we already have, which is some people simply like to do bad things. If you can't keep those people from doing bad things, then they're going to keep doing bad things, and they're just going to find a different tool. This is what we see now with gang members. Gang members inherently are violent, most of them that are involved in these gangs. They mostly have to have violent initiations to get involved in them. And simply saying that these individuals have carte blanche immunity to do whatever they want now is going to show you what they're trying to do from the leftist communist agenda, is to bring down, demonize the constitutional Americans, even the constitutional Hispanics, blacks, whites, doesn't matter who you are, if you're a American, essentially, and you believe in freedom, and you believe in constitutional law, and you believe in being able to protect yourself, they don't want that. That is why they've pushed so hard to do everything they can to remove our ability to defend ourselves, and that's why they're pushing over and over and over again. And that's why I said yesterday, absolutely never disarm. Also, to another firearm news, Colt manufacturer, U.S. gun manufacturer Colt, will now be ceasing production of all civilian rifles, citing poor sales. The company was one of the go-to manufacturers for AR-15s in the United States. They said this will mark the end of some of the most iconic AR-15s ever, as Colts were a go-to AR for consumers as Americans love the modern sporting rifle emerged in the late 20th century. Now, the issue that they're citing with this is over the past few years, the market for sporting rifles has seen a significant decline in demand because of basically a glut on the market, leading to some of the lowest prices ever seen for new-in-the-box AR-15s. And I can attest to this because I've been in the firearm market for years. I've watched a lot of the numbers on it. And you have companies now like Smith & Wesson and other ones, so forth, that are now coming out with essentially new-in-the-box AR-15s you could buy for like $450. I mean, brand new, in the box, pick it up at the dealer. And the issue with this is a lot of the quality of those firearms is, it's cheap. Now, for a plinking rifle or for a backup AR, for a spare parts AR, something you just want to keep as a backup handoff to one of your friends if something goes sideways, it should cover you, they're decent rifles for that. I've shot a few of the M&P, you know, the cheap AR-15s. Never had any cycle problems with them. Never had any accuracy issues with them. So overall, they're pretty good. But as a true hardened forged battle rifle that Colt has been notorious for making for decades now, a very, very, very well-built, robust, long-term battle rifle, you can't cheap out on SARS on the parts for that. The materials, just, you can't cheap out on it. So I see why they're doing this. I think it's poor timing that they're doing this right after we see all these companies like Walmart and so forth stopping selling ammunition for AR-15s the same time we see these hardcore leftists talking about banning AR-15s. I think Colt should have been a little bit more direct about what they were doing with it. But from a sales standpoint, I understand what's going on. I mean, you can go on GunBroker or any gun site now, and I mean, it's hundreds of different brands of AR-15s, all within the $400, $500, $600 mark now on a regular basis all over the place. And a lot of this was occurring after Sandy Hook. When Obama came out and he started discussing an assault weapons ban and a magazine ban, standard AR-15s at that point in time in 2013 were selling for upwards of $2,000 on the market because everybody thought they were going to get banned. Standard capacity 30-round, you know, PMags, magazines, were going for upwards of $50 to $60. Standard 5.56 ammunition was going for a dollar a round. This was not uncommon at all. I watched this for many months. And so what happened is all the AR-15 manufacturers spooled up full tilt 100% as fast as they could get the machines going. They were cranking out AR-15s because there literally was a shortage on the market. That's why all the AR-15s went up $2,000 plus. And so Colt is feeling that impact now, and we have so many firearms saturating the United States populace. I was talking to my buddy Mike yesterday. He came into the office and he said the new reports now, actual reports from all the manufacturers and purchases and everything now, they're now saying that currently by the end of this year, we're looking at, including handguns, shotguns, rifles, we're looking at roughly 760 million firearms in the United States, including ones that basically may be produced that are not registered, like as far as with the 80% lowers. Those are the estimates on it. So we're now looking at roughly two firearms for every single man, woman, and child in the entire United States populace. We are by far the most armed country in the entire world, which shows you why they're talking about wanting us to basically buy back these firearms and confiscate these firearms and have us turn them in. And I think this is kind of a play from the globalists to see what kind of flack they were going to get. I don't think that comment that O'Rourke made last week was off the cuff. I think that was a planned comment. I think he was told to make that comment because I think they wanted to basically feel the market. They wanted to feel the populace. There's been, I can't even tell you how many memes and videos that have been made jokingly about O'Rourke after that comment. And so social media's blown up with it. There's been so many people talking about it, including us on our show, discussing the fact that it's not going to happen, it's not going to work, and we're not going to go with it. And so I think the globalists wanted to kind of do a little research study. I think they wanted to see what the American population was going to do if a presidential candidate came on national television and said, yes, we're going to take your AR and we're going to take your AK, essentially saying we're going to steal your modern-day sporting rifle for self-defense away from you. And they wanted to see what the populace was going to do about it. And, of course, they got a serious backlash, the same way they did in 2013 when Obama made the comments about the assault weapons ban after Sandy Hook. There were like 40 million AR-15s sold in the period of, you know, of that year. It was insane. So this is what we're seeing now, and so the American population has to continue to be resilient, continue to be strong, and pretty much take a stand right here, right now, like we've done again as we see the sales have gone through the roof, that no, we're not going to sell these back. No, they're not going to be taken back. No, they're not going to be confiscated back. No, you're not going to take my legal sporting rifle that I use for any lawful purpose away from me unconstitutionally. And that's where I think the American population has to hold that stance now, Dad.
You know, Austin, you know, well said. The reality is that, you know, when they do a beta test like that, which is what Rourke did, he basically said a statement, and then they go in and they measure the algorithms of the record every word you say. Every word is recorded. And they have this AI system now, I'm sure, hooked into the doggone algorithms. And they're saying, okay, let's test this. Let's talk about taking the AR-15s. Let's look at the pro and con comments. Let's see how resilient the American patriots really are. Let's find out if we've shot enough people in false flag Sandy Hook environments. I thought I'd just mention that. Or all these other false flag jobs that they have running around, that maybe we've now created a problem for the United States psyche and they have to get rid of their weapons. Let's just see that. Now, the liberals, they're all about taking the guns. And the other day, I met a Jewish guy, and he's an artist, and he works with glass up here in North Carolina. And I started talking to him, and I walked into his guard studio, and the first thing he said was he had a liberal talk show playing. So I asked him, I said, did you listen to the debates last night? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, well, he looked at me and goes, what is your stand on guns? That's the first thing he says to me. And I mean, I don't even know the guy. And he goes, I think all guns should be taken. And I looked at him, I said, I'm pro Second Amendment, bud. Little dog.
Hey, bud, we're losing
you. I opened the door of my truck and this little dog. Okay, you lost me? Am I back?
You're cutting in and out every like 5 or 10 seconds, but it's really hard to understand what you're saying.
Okay, hang on 1 second. Let me see if I get a little better signal here. Is that any better off it or not?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. But so what happened is, I don't know if you guys heard what I was talking about. This guy's an artist. You know, he's Jewish. And that has nothing to do with it, but I'm going to make a point about that just right now. And he was saying how we need to be disarmed as Americans and all the guns need to be taken away. And I told him I was pro-Second Amendment, so the conversation ended up being very short. And what the irony of all of it was is he had a little dog with him. I opened my truck door, and the dog jumps in my truck. He's trying to get away from this guy. He wants to go with me. And so the guy jumps in my truck, and there's laying on my dash right in the consoles this giant Glock. And the guy flips out. And, I said, I told you I was pro-Second Amendment. And see, and this is the funny thing about all of this, is that this guy's Jewish. Okay, does he not realize that one of the reasons that the Jews got marched off to concentration camps in Nazi Germany is because they were not armed? What is wrong with these people, Austin? Doesn't he realize that this is one of the primary things that governments have to do is to disarm the people so they can do whatever they want to do to the people? And it just blows my mind that he acted like that, but he was adamant about it. By the way, I pulled some articles up today, and I posted this on the Health Masters news site. It says, Roy Cohn and Donald Trump, mentor and protege. Now, I'm going to ask you guys some questions here real quick. Donald Trump is probably the most pro-gay president we've ever had, even probably more so than Barack Obama. And, you know, he pushes that whole agenda all of the time. Now, here's the thing that I have a real hard time with all of this, okay? Roy Cohn was a really good friend of Donald Trump's, and Donald Trump saw him as his, you know, as his mentor, and Trump was his protege. In fact, Trump was one of Cohn's favorite clients. They met in 1973 when Trump and his father were facing a suit from a U.S. Department of Justice. Now, here's the thing that really troubles me, Austin. Cohn and Donald Trump continued a close personal and professional relationship after Cohn's death at 59 from AIDS, because, you know, he's a blatant homosexual. Now, here's the irony of this. You know, early on, Cohn had pegged Trump as a promising young man, saying this kid is going to own New York someday. You know, the lawyer assisted Trump in many of his real estate ventures and his prenuptial agreement with his first wife, Ivana. Cohn's lobbying of Reagan administration's officials in 1980 may have been a key factor in the appointment of Marianne Barry, Trump's sister, to a federal judgeship. Although, even though those who cite Barry's connections know that she has formidable skills. Now, what's the irony of this is that these guys stayed on the phone together all the time, constantly. They talked on the phone constantly. He said that Trump and Cohn dined together often. They hobnobbed together at Studio 51, and they talked about that area. You know, I've met gay people before. I have. We all have. And some of them are really nice, and some of them are really weird. But the irony is this. I've never seen gay guys want to hang out with straight guys. I've never seen that. I mean, you know, once they find out you're straight and you're talking pro-Second Amendment, you're talking pro-gun, you're talking pro-marriage, you're talking about your wife, you're talking about your children, they have a tendency to just kind of skedaddle. They don't really want to talk about all that stuff. And they hang out with their own kind. And I mean that in a very sincere way. I've seen it over and over and over again. To me, it seems awful strange that Donald Trump and him went to dinner together all the time. They went to bars and clubs out together all the time. And they talked on the phone literally every day, all the time, until Cohn's death from AIDS. I just thought I'd mention that to you. Now we've got one of the most pro-gay presidents in the entire world. Now you guys can read between the lines and all this, but this just seems really weird. And remember, it was Roy Cohn who introduced Donald Trump to Roger Stone, the guy who liked to put his wife in the magazines in Wife Swapper. So this is some really weird stuff going on in this, and we just got to think through some of this stuff. you know, every once in a while we kind of just have to pull up an article like this and just talk to this a little bit and figure out about how that's happening. So, and I'm not saying that Trump's gay. I'm not saying that. But it just seems very, very strange to me, this whole relationship that he had with Roy Cohn. By the way, I read an article. Are they helping cancer survivors to live healthy lives? And pretty much they don't. Survivors basically are not told by their oncologists, except about 26% of the time, and that basically they should change. In fact, I've listened and I've spoken to oncologists before, and they tell their cancer patients to eat whatever they want to eat because they want them to lose weight during the chemotherapy, and to continue to eat as much sugar and junk food as they possibly can to try to hold their weight up. And you think, well, why would they do that? Well, you know, guys, I don't know, because of the problems associated with cancer acquisition to begin with. Wouldn't an oncologist actually have to change your diet? Maybe you need to get off the nitrites. Maybe you need to start taking supplements. But they don't do that. It seems as though they don't really care about the person.
Hey, bud, we're losing you again. I'm going to take over right now. I'm going to need you to get a better connection. We can't hear anything you're saying. I apologize about that, guys. He's going to reconnect here in a minute. Also, what he's talking about is discussion. I'll just kind of reiterate on this a little bit, and I've seen this happen a lot. It's the individuals, when they're coming down with some type of immune disorder or cancer or so forth, the doctors never discuss the actual impacts of what's probably causing or what has caused or at least contributed to the cancer. And this is crucial, because we talk about this over and over and over again. If you keep doing the same things you did to get what you have as far as whatever disease you've acquired, why do you think anything different is going to change? And that's what the doctors refuse to do, is they get people on chemo and they say, eat whatever you want, pack as much calories as you want, we're just trying to make you hold weight as much as you want, blah, blah, blah. And the issue is, that's exactly what I'm talking about. The discussion of nitrites in the conjunction with cancer. The aspects of how sugar feeds cancer cells. The aspects of how dairy, in a lot of cases, especially homogenized, pasteurized dairy, feeds cancer cells. They don't talk about any of that stuff. They just tell you to eat whatever you want, because essentially chemotherapy is killing everything in your body, including the healthy cells. And so it's so crucial, and that's why we've seen so much positive work with individuals who decided to go the natural route and do intravenous vitamin IVs, vitamin C IVs, to do high levels of D3, turmeric, and so forth like that, and a natural healthy immune system protocol. And of course, included in that is massively changing the diet, making sure the body is becoming enough alkaline with proper vegetables, staying away from processed foods, hydrogenated foods, artificial sweeteners, high fructose corn syrup, sugar especially, alcohol especially, caffeine, coffee especially, when you're fighting those things off. So it's crucial that you understand that if you're trying to make changes in your diet, if you're trying to make changes in your health, that supplements are important, diet is important, but sitting there and going, hey, I'm going to go down the medical route and not do anything different with my life and expect a chemotherapy to save me, is something that a lot of people have been trying to push down the mainstream media, including Amazon. Where Jeff Bezos has now just launched a new propaganda campaign called Amazon Goes Gold, which is essentially referring to the gold color of the chemotherapy, and blatantly pushing the big pharmaceutical lie that chemotherapy is essentially a universal cure for childhood cancer. What they did was they did a big article of a heartbreaking story of a Texas girl who underwent chemo for stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and went into detail and all the gritty detail of it. And at the same time, Amazon is saying that they're going gold and will now be shipping out gold ribbons with all Amazon Prime orders during the month of September. Now, ironically enough, the same time Amazon's doing this, they have begun banning content about natural healing alternatives repeatedly now for months. We've gone into detail on that, how they'll talk about some things that they'll completely ban and say you can't talk about them, including videos like Vaxxed, but then they'll turn around and promote to the top of the list basically the cancer methods like chemotherapy, including this right here, the multi-billion-dollar cancer industry with chemotherapy, and now saying Amazon goes gold. So one thing about this that you have to understand is that they're so thrilled to push the Amazon Goes Gold campaign in order to push the chemotherapy medical industrial complex narrative, and that is exactly what Amazon has done. As I've said so many times, they ban certain things on Amazon and then turn around and will not ban other things that fit their narrative. Did I hear you come back on? Did you get another connection? Can you hear me? Are you there?
I hear you, buddy.
All right, guys, I don't know if he's got a connection back again. I'll go on to another article here. I apologize about that. Also, too, in other news, this is something that I found troubling, as we've seen a lot of recalls in the last month, in the last couple of years to the last month, repeatedly seeing recall, and sometimes huge swaths of production food, even in different lots and different batches, and recalling them over one single contamination thing that they have found out. We've seen two incidences now this week. King Arthur Flour just recalled 15,000 cases of flour sold at popular retailers after they said they found traces of E. coli in one batch. Now, ironically about this, these 15,000 cases are around 5 pounds a bag, so it's roughly 71,000 pounds of flour that they have now recalled. And what's interesting about this is, you guys know with flour, flour is a not ready to eat food. It has to be cooked in general. And so in most cases, when you bake anything and you kill anything, you're going to kill off it, but it doesn't matter. They're recalling all this. And then at the same time, we just see the USA Today put out a report that they said there's now been a recall from the FDA of 120,000 cases of gold medal flour, which is basically 600,000 pounds of flour that has now been recalled again because they said there has been one batch that was tested positive for E. coli. Now, E. coli is obviously not a joke. That's not something you want to take lightly, nor do you want to use any of this stuff that has E. coli in it. But, man, recall it in total now, 670,000 pounds of flour? I mean, we're pushing upwards of 3/4 of a million pounds of baking flour. That seems to be very ominous to me, especially the fact that a lot of these batches have not even been sent out yet. The manufacturers recalling them from their storage facilities already, which makes me wonder, are these batches of flour actually going to be, you know, thrown away? Wouldn't it make more sense before you throw away 600,000 pounds of flour to go in and start going into those batches and testing them to see if they have any more that are contaminated with E. coli? I don't know. I haven't seen all the research or the lab testing on this. I'm just going by what they're telling us. But I'm just kind of putting questions out there. 600,000 pounds of flour, that is a lot of flour, and that can feed a lot of people with a lot of bread for a very, very, very long time. And so tossing all this stuff, man, I'd really have to see if this stuff's actually going to be disposed of or if this stuff's being rerouted to freeze-dried factories or going down to underground bunkers or getting redirected to other countries. I don't know. That's my speculation, but it seems awfully odd to me that recalling that much flour seems like the easiest method before testing or checking any other aspects of that, Dad. What do you think?
You know, Austin, well, no, it's ridiculous. You're right. Why don't they do some more batch testing? Why don't they find out if more flour samples are contaminated? I mean, and the other question you got to ask yourself, how in the E. coli basically comes from poop? You know, how did poop get in the flour? I mean, what's going on with the processing facilities? They're not slaughtering beef in a flour mill. I mean, what the heck? How's that getting processed like that with E. coli contamination? None of this makes any sense. It's another one of those really weird stories that you think, what the heck are they talking about? Maybe they're trying to get it at a dirt bottom low price for storage in like underground facilities. I don't know. But that's a lot of flour. You can make a lot of bread with 750,000 a ton of flour. It's nonsense. By the way, I want to cover this real quick. Back in the 20s, the Gerson Cancer Clinic found out that the primary cause of leukemia was a subclinical scurvy diagnosis. Just thought I'd mention that to you guys who haven't been listening to the show. In other words, the people who had come down with leukemia had a vitamin C deficiency. And now doctors have discovered that septic patients have scurvy. did you hear what I just say? The septic patients have service. I mean, sepsis is the number one cause of death among hospitalized patients. The mortality rate is as high as 60%, and despite the efforts of scientists and physicians, this dangerous systemic infection continues to claim millions of lives per year worldwide. Over 100 clinical trials over the past 30 years have failed to improve the outcomes for sepsis. But, you know, in public research, Dr. Paul Marinick, an ICU physician at Eastern Virginia Medical School, detailed how he uses high-dosage vitamin C to save the lives of dozens of sepsis patients. Now, this information came out about a year or so ago, 2 years ago, but I want to cover this again. It's very, very important that if you get diagnosed with sepsis or with leukemia or with any type of disease like that, any kind of disease, that you go in and get intravenous vitamin C. And the irony of this is that if a child has a reaction from the MMR vaccine and they go into a cytokine storm, the research shows that if that child gets intravenous vitamin C immediately, or even high dosing of vitamin C orally, primarily intravenously, that it stops the cytokine storm and it stops the reaction and the brain inflammation from the MMR shot. Now, I just thought I'd mention that. And what we have here is a major problem in the United States and globally with vitamin C deficiencies. You know, with the USDA telling us we need like 60 milligrams of vitamin C a day, that's complete nonsense. What that does, that prevents the onset of scurvy symptoms. It doesn't mean that you don't have subclinical scurvy. It just means you don't show the symptoms of scurvy, like your gums aren't bleeding, your teeth aren't falling out. But the reality is we need between 4,000 to 6,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day. I take it every day. First thing in the morning I get up, put in a glass of water, and I drink it. And I think myself, I've got to have the vitamin C, because vitamin C is the principal component of collagen. Collagen is a cellular glue that holds your body together, and vitamin C is one of the primary uses of it is for the immune system as far as with macrophage activation. Guys, it's so important that you get enough vitamin C every single day. But now they're saying if you have sepsis, you need to be on intravenous vitamin C. And what I do, if I get a sore throat or if I start getting a cold or whatever, I just go get a vitamin C IV. And the problem is the vast majority, probably over 99% of the doctor's offices and hospitals in the United States don't allow you to do that. Now, I find it funny that the Food and Drug Administration and the FDA and all the rest of the guys out there doing all their little research, they basically banned the high production of vitamin C for intravenous use several years ago. And now most doctors who do that, they've got to go to compounding pharmacies. Now, you have to ask yourself a question. If they know that it helps cure a plethora of diseases, why in the world won't they allow it to be used for treatment of sepsis and AIDS and all these other different types of infections and leukemia? Why in the world isn't it an approved treatment? Oh, that's right. I know the answer to that, Austin. I'm glad I asked that. Because they don't make enough money on it. You can get a vitamin C IV for about $100. It used to be 60, 50. And then what happened, it started getting more and more and more expensive, and they started clamping down on the supply lines. And the same thing with IV bags. Sometimes it's impossible to get IV bags for these doctors that administer vitamin C. They just dried up the IV bag supply because they don't want doctors putting vitamin C in the patients. It goes right back to that CAMF molecule that they were using to treat cancer in autistic patients that several doctors were supposedly killed over, which I believe they were killed over it, and it helps to reduce the risks of cancer or heart disease, and they said treated effectively autism in 15% of the cases. So, but they can't use that either because suddenly they don't want you using those types of drugs. Now they're coming out with brain implant interfaces, Austin. They're developing right now so that the blind can see. And you think, wow, what a great thing that is, the blind to be able to see. And hey, I agree with that. If the blind are able to see because they're getting a brain chip interface hooked into their optic nerve or into their eye or into their brain or whatever, I'm excited about that. But remember what I told you about a few weeks ago? I said, why do we have so many autistic children? And if all of a sudden, if an autistic child gets a brain interface to connect that child to AI, and that child suddenly becomes a normal talking child and no longer has, quote, autism or the symptoms of it because he has an implant, how many people are going to be lining up to bring their autistic children get an AI implant? How many people who are senile or have parents with senile dementia are going to be taking their parents to get an AI brain implant chip? Austin, they will line up by the millions to be interfaced into the AI system. Mark my word. What do you think, bud?
They will. I mean, that's a very, very accurate statement. We've seen, I mean, in numerous cases when similar things have come out, not necessarily to that degree of technology, but when something comes out, I mean, just for example, look at the massive amount of, I don't even know the term to use on it, just ridiculousness. I mean, that's the only thing you come up with when they come up with a new iPhone. And people will camp on the sidewalks for days at a time so they can be the first one to have the latest and greatest new iPhone technology. And that's to go spend $1,000 on a piece of crap iPhone, excuse my language, that basically has to be updated all the time and is constantly out of, you know, in a year from now, it's being completely slowed down, as Apple's already gotten accused of that numerous times, where they'll basically throttle down old iPhones when new ones get released so that people want to go buy new ones. I mean, it's a total scam. And think about if it came out with something at that level where you can interface your Apple phone and you can actually see, or it can stop the autism symptoms. And then what's going to happen is if they do that, many more people that don't even have problems are going to show up and go, oh my gosh, this is great. This is amazing. We got to go do all this. And this is exactly what the individual talked about. I have to find his name again. The huge front runner for 5G when that article got released earlier this year, when he discussed 6G, and he said all 5G is a lily pad to go up to 6G once we get the infrastructure in place. And with 6G, you're going to be able to interface your phone into your brain and be able to use it. Now, how else do you think you're going to do that? What do you think you're just going to, you know, put your cell phone on a selfie stick and strap it to your head and it's going to bounce around? That's how you're going to have it all the time? I don't think so. You're going to interface this thing with a chip into your brain and you're going to be able to use it, and you're essentially going to be able to be all part and all smart and all powerful. You're going to be able to do anything you want to do, essentially, is what they're going to say it as. You're going to be going and you're going to be able to do whatever school you need to do, learn anything you need to do, but there's going to be a price for that. There's going to be a steep price for that, because in my opinion, once you interface into that, it's going to open up something into you that was never intended to be open, and it more than likely, it's just my opinion, it's going to cost you your soul, and that's just my opinion on it. And people will probably argue with me on that topic, but I'm telling you right now, when you start allowing that AI technology to basically interface into your body and into your brain, and then you start looking back to Genesis, and it talks about every thought of every man was evil all of the time. Those are strong statements. Those are really strong statements when you read that. And I mean, any interpretation you read it, it says the same thing. How else do you get every thought of every man to be evil all of the time? I mean, that's a really, really, really direct statement to make. Well, if you start interfacing AI so you can download all the porn and all the filth and all the disgusting everything else that's out there right into somebody's brain subconsciously without them even knowing it, they're probably going to start having evil thoughts all the time, and nothing's going to be good whatsoever. Just my take on it, just my opinion on it. Something I would just bring up on it. Also, too, in other news, they're having basically a report of another individual that has essentially died, allegedly, from e-cigarette health concerns. Now, I'm seeing a lot of basically information back and forth on e-cigs. I've told you guys for years now, they're not a healthy alternative to cigarettes. Are they more dangerous than cigarettes? No, in my opinion, they're not. They may be in some aspects of it, but I've seen numerous cases where the cigarette big tobacco industry has funded a lot of the research to demonize vaping and vice versa. But on the other hand as well, there's definitely no question about it that the chemicals and toxins they're using in this e-juice and other aspects of it is not healthy for you whatsoever. And the aspect that you've got a lithium ion powered battery vaporizer in your face, and that we've had numerous reports of those blowing up randomly and overheating and exploding and causing all types of injuries, that's something that is pretty serious as well. So just, I wanted to bring that up. You know, I've seen this, more and more people now are vaping all the time. There's people running around, vape. It's a big trend, huge industry. They're saying by the end of this year, it's going to be over a $10 billion industry just in the vape market. And so if you're smoking cigarettes and you're trying to stop, I wouldn't suggest going over to vaping as far as an alternative. It's got its own other batch of issues, especially with all the toxins and formaldehyde and chemical compounds that they're putting in all this vape juice. Not to mention, the one thing about it that they have said is that a lot of people are coming down with pneumonia that vape because of the water vapor you are regularly ingesting into your lungs. You know, tobacco has been around for a very long time. We understand the dangers of tobacco. If you decide to smoke cigarettes, that's on you. But again, it's been around for a while. It's nothing new. This whole vaping thing really didn't come to light till the late 2000s. And we're starting to see now one of the biggest aspects of it is pneumonia because of the ingested water vapor into the lungs on a regular basis through these vaping utensils that people are using. So I just want to bring that up out there. I haven't talked about it in a while, but it's definitely not a healthy alternative if that's what you're looking for. And in some cases, it may be actually worse than smoking cigarettes because of the massive amount of water vapor that you're pulling into your lungs all day long. Just wanted to bring that up again today, Dad, because I've seen more of it in the news. Not a lot of people have been talking about it, but it's just something I want to kind of put my take on there out of.
Well, you know, it's still nicotine. I mean, we're still,
yeah,
it's still a vape, it's still a vasoconstrictant. It's still not healthy. It still is going to increase blood pressure. I mean, they make it so it's supposed to be the healthier alternative, but it's still nicotine. I mean, the whole key with any type of addiction like that, you have to titrate your dosing down. In other words, if you're smoking 5 packs a day, why don't you drop it down to 4 packs a day? You know, don't try to stop. Just drop it down to 4 packs, then drop it down to 3 packs, then drop it down to 2 packs, and then 1 pack. And just focus on it. It's like chewable tobacco. You got to just cut it down. And finally, you get to the point where you're not using it much. And you finally say, well, I'm just going to just go a day without this. Maybe 2 days without it. And that's the best way to get off of the habits. Drinking coffee. You know, when I was in college, I was drinking 18 cups of coffee a day. It was crazy. And then when I got out of college, I was still drinking 18 cups of coffee a day when I started, you know, Health Masters back in 1981. And I thought, you know, I'll just keep going, keep pushing and pushing and pushing my adrenals. The other day I talked to somebody, and the lady's in sales, and she's like 50 years old. She's already had cancer twice, unbelievably sickly. Her husband has cancer. She has cancer. I mean, it's horrible. And I told her, I said, you know, she's go, 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 go. She makes very good money. She makes like $500,000 a year. I mean, it's incredible money. Amazing how rich she is. But she's going all the time. She's working 60, 70, 80 hours a week. Every time you try to talk to her, call her up or whatever, she's on the road. She's on an airplane. She's on the road. She's in a meeting. And I finally asked her, I said, you know, how much is enough? And she goes, what do you mean? I said, how much money do you need? I said, do you really need $500,000 a year to live on? Really? I said, that's a lot of cash. I said, plus your husband works. I said, you know, I'm glad he's over the cancer. I said, but how much stress do you want to put on your body? You know, how much do you want to do this? And see, and that's the same question I told her. I said, I had to answer that same question with the coffee. You know, and working, I was working 70, 80, 90, 100 hours a week when I came down with pericarditis when I was in my 20s. And I finally said, I'm not doing this anymore. You know, you got to let go and let God. It's not by power, it's not by might, it's by my spirit, saith the Lord. Get the scripture in for the day. And that's what we have to do. We have to just let go, let God. We have to pray like it's all up to God and work like it's all up to us. But God, you don't have to kill yourself. You don't have to work. If you're having to work 100-hour work weeks just to get by, maybe you need to think about another profession. Or maybe you need to think about scaling a bag. Maybe you need to ask yourself another question like I asked this lady the other day. Is it enough? So what I do with the coffee, I start tapering it down, 17, 16, 15, 14, all the way down until I had 1 cup. And I thought, because I didn't want to stop because of the massive headaches you get from caffeine withdrawal. And then finally, I finally got off of it, you know, got it down to 0.5 cup, and then I finally got off of it, and I had massive headaches and caffeine withdrawal anyhow. And I thought to myself, this is horrible. Guys, and it's one of those things. You know, if you're smoking, if you're drinking a lot of coffee, if you're drinking a lot of alcohol, you probably need to cut back on it because it's just not healthy. By the way, here's another question for you. Why is the New York Fed, which, by the way, controls the Exchange Stability Fund, by the way, the New York Fund, pretty much Fed, is this Exchange Stability Fund. That's how they took over the Treasury in 1934. Why are they pumping billions of dollars into the money market? Yeah, the New York Federal Reserve Bank's emergency interventions or money markets came on a sudden cash crunch, drove up the cost of borrowing the money that banks need to replenish the reserves they hold in the central bank. For the first time in more than a decade, since like 2008, we had this other massive shortage of cash. The U.S. Central Bank this week stepped into financial markets to keep interest rates and short-term lending from popping above its target range. The New York Federal Reserve Bank conducted money market interventions on Tuesday and Wednesday and planned another for Thursday morning as a cash crunch drove up the cost of borrowing for banks that need to replenish the reserves they hold at the central bank. So what the heck? Why are they doing this? See, ask yourself, what is the money market? Financial institutions use money markets to borrow for very short periods from one day to a year. It's a crucial function that keeps the gears of the economy running. In other words, it keeps all of the money flowing to the banks for debits, for purchases, etc. In called repurchase or repo agreements, banks borrow by putting up assets like treasury notes as collateral and then repay the loans with interest the following day. This lets them replenish the cash in their holdings that they keep at the central bank whenever the amount falls below that required, that is the minimum set by the Fed. Guys, it's happening again. The same thing that happened in 2006, 2007, 2008. These chickens are coming home to roost. These trillions of dollars in quantitative easing wasn't enough to handle quadrillions of dollars in leveraged debt. When you've got $1,400 trillion out, that was out in 2008, and that number's only gone up, with more leveraged and more liquidity problems and more buyouts and more these crazy things they put out, these money market things they do, that's all based on fractional reserve with 40-to-1 lending rates, and then they start doing these derivatives, which is like 100-to-1. You know, you run out of cash. This is why the globalists and the international banking cartels are pushing for a new world order with a digitized currency, so they don't run out of money, they don't run out of cash. Remember when this whole thing hit the fan in 2007, 2008, when the stock market went into free fall, there was only $800 billion of printed notes in existence. Now, the Treasury has been pumping money, pumping money, pumping money. In fact, you know, trillions and trillions of dollars have gone out. It's like the M1, which is the amount of money in circulation, is up at least 20-fold. That's what they're admitting could be much, much, much higher than that. This is why they run the naked shorts on the gold market, to keep the gold down, because the gold should be 20 times higher than it was. So it's very, very important that we understand this. In fact, the U.S. Fed Powell downplays the concerns about the cash crunch on financial markets in another article. It says the U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell downplayed concerns in recent days about a cash crunch in the U.S. financial markets, saying the situation says little about the real economy. Powell said the need to pay quarterly tax payments was a factor, which prompted the New York Federal Reserve Bank twice this week to inject liquidity into the short-term funding market. Guys, this is a major problem. Now, the Fed's going to continue to push more money into the economy and to keep this liquidity up for at least another 18 months. And you say, well, why 18 months, Ted? Well, because this is when Donald Trump will be running for election again. In fact, this won't even, you know, this is when it all is going to, this is when he has to, you know, be off president again. And don't want to have a situation where he loses the election. They really want to keep him in there because the Fed is Rothschild owned, remember? And Trump was bailed out by the Rothschild banking cartel. So they're doing everything they possibly can. So be very careful in these markets right now, because you could have one giant bank fail right now, and this whole house of just cards could come down crashing on top of everybody. Guys, it's so important that we don't let everybody have a repeat of 2007 and 2008. By the way, local governments, prosecutors with campaigns funded by George Soros are setting killers free. Over the past few years, George Soros has spent over $13 million on district attorney races and local governments across 17 states. Again, this is a Rothschild cutout. Without passing a single law, a DA prosecutor can remake a city's justice system. Larry Krasner, the district attorney of Philadelphia and a left-wing communist activist, is using his position to undermine the existing legal system because he claims to believe it is racist. In other words, because you have more blacks and more Hispanics in prison who commit more crimes, it's racist. Okay, that maybe they shouldn't commit as many crimes. Just thought I'd mention that. He has refused to enforce drug and prosecution laws. Petty theft has almost been decriminalized, and he has deferred prosecuting cases involving gun crime cases. And crime has skyrocketed, and the homicide rate has risen now by 12% in Philadelphia. Guys, you know, when you let the lawless go out and do whatever they want to do, and you refuse to prosecute them, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to do more and more and more crime, because it's what they do. They're called criminals. It's idle conversation. You say, well, they shouldn't do that. Criminals shouldn't be criminals. Well, It's what they do. They commit crimes. That's why they're called criminals. It's idle conversation. And when you don't hold them accountable for what they do, and petty theft and stealing purses and stealing watches and whatever they want to do, or stealing phones, is no longer a crime and they won't be prosecuted, those types of crimes are going to go through the roof, and they're going to escalate because you're reinforcing that deviant behavior of stealing other people's stuff. What do you think, Austin?
Oh, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. When you start reinforcing deviant behavior like the communist, leftist, liberal Democrats are doing now, all it does is incite more behavior like that. When you tell people, it doesn't matter if you come over here legally, we can come to our state and we'll make sure it's a sanctuary state. We'll make sure you get free food and free housing and free cell phone and free health care and free everything that you want, because that's what we're going to do. The only logical thing that's going to happen is you're going to get more people coming there for more free stuff. And as long as they continue to tax the high dollar individuals in California that are paying their insane state income tax and all their insane property taxes and everything else, they're going to be able to keep up the charade for as long as they can. And that's the problem they've had, though, is that a large percentage of the high rollers in California have been gun moving out now because the expenses are getting so high out there. So then what do? They follow them out to another state that's actually generally a really good state, or used to be a good state, like Colorado. And they go in and they start trying to push their hardcore leftist communist agenda out there. So they take more money from all the people that are out in Colorado and spread it around and give it to everybody else, and so forth. And that's what they do. They're like a cancerous plague. Communism is cancerous. It spreads. The problem is it doesn't work. It ends up killing the host at a certain point. That's why communism has never functioned long term healthy in any single civilization ever. It can function, it can happen, but it's an absolute abysmal nightmare, and it completely and totally fails at the end. This is the problem that we see. Also, too, in other news, remember, what was it, about a year ago, we heard that they were coming out with the 2-year experiment to release genetically modified mosquitoes down in South America, and the GMO pushers and the scientists, they insisted that these genetically modified male mosquitoes were infertile. They could never have offspring. We were told that basically they were doing this for the greater good, and it was for our protection, and it was going to save human lives. And then essentially, we didn't approve it, and we didn't like it. We were anti-science idiots that basically didn't know what we were talking about. And Dad and I talked about on the show repeatedly that it was an absolutely horrific idea to genetically modify mosquitoes and let them out in the wild. Well, of course, nobody ever listened to us at all as far as when it came to the GMO industry. And for the initial 18 months of the experiment carried out in Brazil, in which 450,000 genetically modified male mosquitoes were released in the wild, the male populations plummeted from the beginning of the time. Well, now, this summer, they're finding out in a new research study that's been published in the Journal of Nature, the very same modified genes in those male mosquitoes that we were told would never be able to replicate because they were infertile has now passed on those GMO genes into the natural mosquito population. Surprise, surprise. So now the wild population of the mosquitoes in Brazil have caused these mutant genes, which they were combined from Cuba and Mexican mosquito populations, and now they have caused these super mutant insects that apparently these mosquitoes are getting larger, smarter, stronger, and more resilient, and also now, too, thanks to the GMO aspects of them, they are resistant to any pesticides, so you can't even kill them with mosquito spray, and apparently DEET doesn't even bother them either now because they're so resilient. I can't even make this stuff up. And now they're saying that if this continues to occur and these things continue to reproduce at the rate they are doing and they continue to give off this gene that they have in them, which hasn't stopped at all, that they're going to start having a massive amount of die-off of humans in South America because these mosquitoes have become so aggressive and so large now, and that essentially nothing kills them except a really, really big fly swatter. But if you guys have lived in Florida or any other southern state that deals with mosquitoes, you will know real quick, when you walk out into a Florida swamp in the middle of August after a storm and the mosquitoes are gone, going. It doesn't matter how big of a fly swatter, how many fly swatters you have. Those mosquitoes will literally eat you alive until you either spray them down with an insecticide or you run and take cover in a screen room. And that's about the only option. And now that the insecticides aren't working on these guys now, they got themselves a serious issue down there in South America. So again, GMO science at its finest debacle. Let's GMO mosquitoes and release them out in the wild and hope nothing bad happens to it. The same thing that I called out and I'm telling you is going to start happening very, very soon, as we've already heard reports of it, of the GMO salmon that they have been concocting up in South America that they have now said they want to release out into the wild, that are going to end up being larger, stronger, smarter salmon that are going to end up eating the rest of the population as their growth rate goes exponential. And then, who knows, we may end up having these massive salmons that act like piranha. We never know with these guys. Knowing them, they probably put some piranha gene in the salmon to make them more aggressive.
That's true.
Now we're going to start wild packs of salmon attacking people and eating them in streams and rivers. I don't know. I'm totally speculating now. But when you start playing God like these guys do, and you start gene editing, you start CRISPR-9 editing, you start moving all this stuff around and just playing with it to see what's going to happen, it can cause some very, very serious mutations, Dad.
You know, we warned genetically modified mosquitoes out. We said this is not a good idea. But again, they like to do stuff like this. You're right, Austin. You don't know what they're going to do. I mean, and you know, you're right. You know, swamp certain times of the year after a rainstorm, and you literally can't get out of the vehicle. I mean, it's that bad.
No,
if you can't live in a southern state, you have no idea what that's like. You can't, because they will eat your life. Oh, by the way, real quick, the cabinet choices are a sign that Trump's pledged to drain the swamp. Trump has put more people in his cabinet than anyone ever has who are former lobbyists. Just thought I'd mention that. The lobbyist groups in D.C. right now are spending $3.4 billion a year telling your politicians what to vote for. Guys, I love you. I appreciate you. Sorry about their signal quality early in the show. At least I got a good signal now. I appreciate you guys. I have not yet prayed for you today. I'm fixing to do that right now. And I will talk to you guys tomorrow. And Austin, I'll do the write-up. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, absolutely, guys. And thank you again for the continued support. Be sure, if you want to check out the product of the week, the Magnesium Body Balm. Really, really good formula. Great for rashes, hydrating dry skin, wrinkles, all kinds of different stuff. Really good formula. Be sure to check it out on Product of the Week at HealthMasters.com. Over 20% off this week. Really, really great product. So be sure to check that out. We appreciate you guys. Thank you for your support. Stay sharp, stay prepared, guys. When you start seeing 660,000 pounds of flour getting recalled, you gotta kinda wonder what's gonna happen to the food supply when we already know we're seeing a shortage out in the Midwest of yield this year. Be prepared. Always have some backup food, backup water supplies at all times. Thank you guys for the support. Have a blessed, safe, awesome night. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, as always.